This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. Now, most of us have heard the story of how Hansel and Gretel get lost in the woods and entrapped by a witch who lives in a gingerbread house. We'll soon be able to revisit the fairy tale in opera form through a staging of Hansel and Gretel, a fairy tale opera, by the Kuala Lumpur City Opera. The show will be running from the 5th to the 8th of July at the Kuala Lumpur Performing Arts Centre. And joining me today to talk about the show are the opera's stage director, Christopher Ling, conductor Juan Montoya, and performer Janet Lee. Thank you for coming on the show, guys. How is everyone?
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Tell me a little bit, Chris, about what it's like to direct an opera.
It's extremely nerve-wracking. Some would call it artistic suicide. But having done it now, this is now the fourth opera that I've had the wonderful opportunity to work with, the KL City Opera. So it's happening.
Is this the first time that it's sort of something that's so, like, you know, beloved childhood classic?
Certainly the first time that the opera that we're working on has that source. Although, having said that, the second piece that we worked on with KLCO was Amal and the Night Visitors. So I think that's also somewhat close, you know. Somewhat close.
Tell me a little bit about how the story of Hansel and Gretel is transposed onto the opera form.
Okay. I don't know how familiar everyone is with the Brothers Grimm version of Hansel and Gretel, but if you haven't read it, as a primer, I'd say it's very, very dark.
Yes.
There are many characters in the original Hansel and Gretel story that are not very nice. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that goes with,
like,
the territory. I mean, it's fairy tale territory, right? It's,
yeah, this is very much a sanitized version.
Exactly, exactly.
Very family and children-friendly, right?
In fact, the very very many of the dark elements that we are very used to in fairy tales, the cautionary bits of the tale, have really, as Janet rightly said, has been sanitized. It's been tidied up a little bit. In fact, actually, in my personal opinion, not tidied up as well, because there are some characters that have loose ends. You know, they've got character motivations that change very dramatically from one scene to the other. The victims of this actually would be the father and the mother character. In the original story, you find that the mother is quite a monster. She's the one, she, in an earlier version, she's the mother. In a later version, she's a stepmother.
Yes, and she wants to get rid of her
children.
That's
right. She gets rid of her kids three times. She chases her kids out of the house three times. And at the end of the story, hey, wonderful. She, you know, destination unknown. We have no idea what happens to her, because the final scene in the original story has the kids coming back to the house, and the father says, hey, your mother is gone. She's no longer around. There's even a version saying she left.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, with an opera, you know, and with the way it was rewritten and repackaged for that time, and when Humperdinck was premiering it, we know that the librettist, she very, very specifically sanitized the character of the mother, so that although she does show some a few of those monstrous qualities and chases the kids out, she chases them out just the once. And right in the end of the opera, you find that she comes back and there is a silent reconciliation between the father, who was the ineffectual father, and the mother, which I find very interesting. So you find that, you know, and also courtesy of the times, you find that it actually becomes an ode to forgiveness and grace and mercy and compassion, which is possibly what the original fairy tale had nothing to do with, but that's debatable.
And I think that end also led us to one of the most beautiful parts of the opera, because the ending, it's very, very outstanding musically. And I'm sure, like, Chris is doing great with the staging, so that translates into the music too. So that's a good point, yeah.
So Juan, tell us a little bit about the music of Hansel and Gretel, because as an opera, obviously, it's a big part of what creates the story as well.
Yes, the music part, actually, this started with an idea from her sister, Humperdinck's sister. she wanted like, hey, why you don't put... He had a couple of songs for kids. And the sister was like, why you don't put this together and make something bigger? And actually, it became one of the big operas because for those who know operas, this opera is compared to kind of like Wagnerian score, like from all these German late romantics where the score is really thick. And this opera is that. It's very, very, very thick. Of course, we are using a reduced version, less instruments. But that's what he did. And apart from what Chris was saying regarding the shortening of the like mean parts and making it more like family friendly, which is going to be very family friendly, the music is very big. And it was premiered by one of the most famous composers, Richard Strauss. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that says a lot too, like not only about the time of the piece, but his friends, the people who performed for the first time. And also I want to tell everybody that this piece was originally written in German, but there are many English translations. We are using one of those, so yeah. The piece will be in English. Yes.
I also understand that one of the things that makes the music of Hansel and Gretel so special is the fact that there are a lot of folk elements and folk influences that come into the score.
Yeah, and not only folk elements, but there are also a lot of motifs that we can, to put it in Star Wars language, it's like you hear a motive and you know, this character is coming.
Ah,
and that happens sometimes unconsciously, but if you pay attention, every character or every situation has a motive, like a little theme, and you know, like, okay. And my favorite is the witch, which we have here with us.
So we were working on that.
Oh, so that's your favorite theme?
Yeah, because the first time that the motive appears, she's not there. So it's kind of like a Darth Vader-ish thing.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, because you hear the motive and she's far away from appearing.
That's a little bit in the beginning of the second act overture.
That's
right?
Towards the end of Act One, so that's very, very far away from when you have come. So yeah.
In fact, what is very interesting about the staging of that particular moment is not only is the music hinting at the witch, but also in terms of blocking, we found that hey, you know, I can actually do the exact same thing that I'm doing with Janet, broomstick and all later. So in fact, you have the father foreshadowing. Almost literally in terms of blocking, and I hope I will be able to translate this with Lim Ang Sui, who's doing our lights, to sort of have a mirror sort of thing. Mm. So when you see it, you go, oh, hold on, I think I've seen this before, you know, in terms of the feel of that particular moment. Mm. Yeah, so not only do you hear the music, the staging somehow just lends itself to it. It might be a different position on stage, but hey, you know, 9 out of 10 lah.
Yeah, but, well, Janet, you're playing the witch that lives in the gingerbread house. What was it like when you knew that you'd be playing this character?
I was at first deliriously surprised. I mean, okay, I know I worked very hard during the audition and leading to it. My singing teacher, my old singing teacher, Cecilia, asked me to audition because she said it's going to be in English and I think you possibly have the personality to pull it off.
Oh, no.
And you love acting.
Typecasting.
So I was like, oh, really? But when the music came, it was mad. But anyway, it's such a lovely gift. It's like one of the biggest gifts for me in my music career is to be able to be offered an operatic role. I mean, I've played ensemble at a few opera productions before, but this is my first role. To be jumping from my usual jazz platform into this one full on, even though I was classically trained, and to be working with really lovely people to fuse everything together, it's magical. I'm absolutely thrilled to be trying this out with these
Jen
people.
And I worked together on a workshop production of Nick Choose the Edge 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and is this the first time since that you're working together?
Yes. Strangely enough, yes. But wow, wonderful. Wonderful.
And what is it? What do you think you're bringing to the character of the witch?
I think personally, as a musician, this is really an exciting time for me to first of all, jumping back into the classical, the whole the whole tone and classical color and that whole awareness of bringing on that sound, you know, so-called unamplified, but in this case, it's slightly amplified. Also bringing with me my very deep interest, even though I'm not a full-time thespian, but I have done some theatre shows. So it's putting together my life experience and also my very, sometimes very apparent annoyance with children when I was told, like, oh, I get to play the witch. And I can tell my friends, yeah, I eat children.
Oh.
Except, oops.
But you cook them.
Yeah, I could have done better. But, you know, all for the better, the happy ending. Yeah.
So, happy not for you, perhaps.
Yeah, in a way, it's the whole experience is a little beyond words for me at the moment, since I'm still deep in rehearsal and preparing myself for the role. But on the other hand, it's overwhelming, and I'm very excited, and I totally, absolutely enjoy this giving myself the 100%. And pinching myself every day that, ooh, I get to do this.
Must be great fun, though, to play the villain of the show.
Yes, it's a plus for me. Yeah, and also to fall in love, great, to fall back in love with classical music and just listening to the music and being in the rehearsal.
Yep. I'm speaking to Janet Lee, who's playing the Gingerbread Witch in an upcoming opera staging of Hansel and Gretel, as well as director Christopher Ling, conductor Juan Montoya. And we'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to stage director Christopher Ling, conductor Juan Montoya, and performer Janet Lee. They're some of the people involved in an upcoming staging of Hansel and Gretel, a fairy tale opera, from the 5th to the 8th of July at KL PAC. Now, a lot of people may not really even know that there is an opera form of Hansel and Gretel.
That's right.
And that it was written by this composer named Engelbert Humperdinck, who...
Sounds familiar.
Who may sound familiar, but actually had his name reused by,
right,
you know, the person that we probably know of.
That's right.
What is his approach to opera when it comes to something like Hansel and Gretel?
To be honest, I heard this about the other Engelbert Humperdinck, but I still don't know who that is.
So you don't know,
right,
who the modern Engelbert Humperdinck is?
Sorry, he has a lot of hair.
Juan is just looking more and more perplexed.
No idea.
Maestro.
But going back to our composer.
Yes.
Yeah, this composer is actually from the late 1900s, early 20th century. So as I mentioned to you, he's kind of from... that he's German, kind of from that current of the late Romanticism before, like, music started going to more to explore other languages. So he's kind of at the end of the Romantic period with Wagner, Strauss, and himself was doing that. He actually, I must say, this is one of his most highlight pieces, because this piece came out from, like, a bunch of, as I mentioned earlier, a bunch of little sections he was doing, probably just for singer and piano. And then he created this masterpiece. But he's well known for this piece. This is like his signature piece. Yeah. Mm.
And in terms of bringing it to life, Chris,
yeah,
how are you staging this opera?
The opera poses a very interesting challenge, because over the three acts, you find that we start in stark reality. We start in the house of Hansel Gretel, you know, with... it's very poor surroundings, you know, a lack of food, all that sort of thing. And it very quickly progresses via a little detour into the forest, the enchanted forest. You land up in, you know, sugar-coated fantasy. So from stark reality, you hit in three acts, sugar-coated, you know, fuzzy reality, fantasy that really, you know, it's a bit difficult to swallow. Mind the part. But quite something. But you see, the thing that is interesting about it is this. So you travel from reality to fantasy. But if you look at the children, the interesting thing is they're doing the opposite thing, because you see, they start off the piece innocent and naive in the way a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old would be, that sort of age, you know. And if you look at the end of the opera, for that matter, the end of the fairy tale, what are they doing?
It's a harsh dose of
killing,
reality. Yeah.
They are killing. Well, okay, granted, she's the our antagonist, but we're killing someone. Mm-hmm. Hello? It's outright bloody murder, right? Okay, even if you push them into an oven also, it still qualifies. So there you have
dies.
It, right? So you have innocent kids killing people by the end of this opera. So it's almost as if it's working in complete contrast. So everything around, while everything around them in their surroundings become more fantastical, the kids are having to make such serious, you know, life-changing sort of things.
Decisions
and then, you know,
and
exactly, that's the thing. The roles that they're playing, the things that they have to consider change. So when you have an opera that requires all of this, you know, it's it would be really nice to, you know, to start off very stark and then move into this. But we thought that the piece is very much about transition. It's very much about journey. So although the second act seems to be like a bridging between, you know, the very interesting first act with the mother and father, the second act features the Dew Fairy, the Sandman. And the Dew Fairy appears at the top of Act 3, and then she brings the kids to the house and meets Janet. but what we decided was, for the setting of the piece, we would ground it very firmly in a sort of fantastical forest. So that's actually the very first image you will see, the forest, and everything is built around that sort of idea. So you're always reminded that this there's something not right with this picture, even right from the top all the way to the end.
Yeah, and this opera is divided in three acts, as he mentioned. But usually we are going to do it to the performances, Act 1 and 2 together, because actually musically they link too, so you don't have to stop there. And actually that's a very good point what he said. Act 2 serves kind of like a bridge between Act 1, where is we could say the drama, but not that dramatic, and the end, which is where the witch appears and all this magical action starts happening too. And I think, like, yeah, you can tell us more about what happened in Act 3 during when you appear.
I suppose in Act 3, the children wonder, and by now they're hungry and starved and tired and all that, and they are now faced with a fantastical environment. They're faced with a plenty, abundance of food. And no one around, so they proceed to feast upon this free food, not knowing and wondering who owns this house, who lives in this house. And then also the children talk about, like, oh, maybe somebody nice is going to come out. Maybe it's a princess, or maybe mm-hmm. she'll be nice, she'll invite us. And someone does come out and invite them to go in and eat. But here the children are a little apprehensive. They're wondering, oh,
yeah. She tries to be nice at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, she's not known to them, and she's overwhelmingly friendly. So what happens? Mm.
This opera really presents a lot of contrasts. Also because of the way the book has been rewritten slightly, and because we want to, because I think the original intent of the fairy tale is very different from the intent now of the opera. So you find that there's so many contrasts. Like, for instance, in the witch's character, you have the witch. She's the witch. She eats children. Mm-hmm. But how can she also be engaging and endearing? And because whether or not I want to eat you, I need to get you into the house first. Mm-hmm. You see, I need to get you into the house first so I can put you into the cage, fatten you up, and then put you into the oven. So I need to get you into the house. So how can
I
do
it? Sounds very dark, but it's going to be family friendly.
how can we do it?
You've got the
broom, you've got the, you've got all that sort.
And, and I could be just a nice little auntie, little auntie who is like posing as a caretaker for the lost and hungry children.
The overall setting of the opera is, although we are paying tribute to the Germanic roots of the piece, so you will find that costumes have got that sort of more European feel. I'm sort of sneakily trying to add in modern references and things. So, like, for instance, actually something that is very interesting is there's not very much food on display. For an opera that tells you that the children go and eat the house, they will be eating the house. Literally, will be eating the house. But there isn't this. We have left a lot to the imagination in terms of the food, in terms of the array of all kinds of different things. Also, things like, for instance, when we talk about the oven, for instance, I joke with the cast that it's a popular, well-known household brand oven that is literally going to be set on stage, right? So I've told my set designer, give me an oven that comes from here. Give me a wonderful kitchen table that comes from here. But very modern references rather than, you know, trying to go with all in the hopes of engaging the audience, mm-hmm. linking the audience to what's going on.
We could have used some product placement and get sponsorships.
I'm not sure if the products want to be associated
with
cooking children.
Well, yeah, okay. Damn.
Yeah, industry size.
But Janet, I was interested to hear you say earlier, how do you make the character of the witch sympathetic? What makes her human?
Honestly speaking, I'm still looking, because we have a few finishing touches to the staging, to the rehearsal and putting everything together. But in preparation to that, from the staging rehearsals with Christopher, with my own preparation, I sort of have, there is quite a clear transformation and also a journey for the witch transforming from a very warm and caring, loving auntie person, a human, into something not quite human. So in my preparation, there is sort of like what do you call it? Like an avatar, like someone who has a lot of inner struggle, wanting to be good, but intrinsically something else gone wrong, like a science experiment gone wrong. So there is a big struggle between the good and the evil. And we'll see how that pan out, because in lyrics
it's
quite...
And what's interesting is that also happens musically again. Like,
yeah,
the struggle
sweet.
is like when she's trying to be nice, the music is nice, and then all of a sudden, no preparation, no like cadence or anything, boom, the music turns bad and she turns bad. So it's like on and off, it's like a bipolar kind of witch thing.
Another interesting fact is the witch is not the only bipolar character on stage. The mother is exactly the same, based on what we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
The mother really, I mean she has to be hideous enough to send her children out. And you see, and we joked about this in rehearsal, about how the mother very purposefully says, go into, it's almost akin to saying something like, go to this particular supermarket because only this particular supermarket has this particular brand of mango. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying, Hansel and Gretel, go to this supermarket and get me these mangoes, as opposed to just saying, get out of the house, you know, I don't want to see your face. You see, so the mum is very, very precise with her wanting to get rid of her children and saying, look, I've had enough of you, please get out, go here. Mm-hmm. And then it pans out that, you know, she sent them into this horrible part of the forest where this crispy witch, which is referred to, which I find quite interesting, crispy witch, I mean, in relation to crispy rendang, crispy witch appearing and doing all this sort of thing. And you see, and then right at the end of the opera, because of the sanitization and the trying to focus it on, you know, the godly values of forgiveness and mercy and compassion, you find that this really hideous mum who does this and gets rid of her children and lies in front of her husband, I mean, for good reason. There are good reasons. I mean, the husband himself is not a very sympathetic character. He comes on drunk. But what happens is at the end, the mother character really does another 180-degree turn, as Juan was saying, for the witch. She does the exact same thing. She pops on it. She has got nothing. She doesn't sing a single thing. So the father, who has been completely ineffectual in Act 1, comes on in Act 3, does the beautiful ending that I look forward to every time we stage it. I'm also overwhelmed by the music and the beauty of the music. But you have this mother was so hideous in Act 1, so just about an hour ago, she's so terrible, and then all of a sudden she's like as meek as a lamb, and she's, and you're going, and I guess that's the challenge, isn't it? Yeah. How do you play a character that has such contrasting changes and making that character really three-dimensional, right? Trying to hit the core of where they're coming from.
And I also think that the situation of the mom is different than the original book. I mean, this is very family friendly, because in this version of the story, the mom is actually what he's saying. Like, she changes a lot, but I think it's because of the situation. Mm-hmm. Because at the very beginning, we know that it's a family that is super broke. They don't have that much money. They don't have that much food. And then the kids are playing with the little food they have. So I guess out of that frustration, she becomes like that too. And then the story develops from there,
And when it comes to the music, as Christopher mentioned earlier, one of the most famous pieces of music in Hansel and Gretel is actually the piece at the end.
Yeah, and before I tell you about the piece at the end, I would like to mention that Hansel and Gretel, we know it's a girl and a boy, but in this case it's two girls, and that's very normal in opera. There is a male's role is played by a woman. That's a common use in opera. So it's not something we are doing. It's actually written like that. Mm-hmm. Yep. And jumping on your question regarding the end, yeah, because I usually, when I do my opera talks, I don't like telling what's happening at the end. It's like you go to watch a cinema and then the trailer tells you, okay, the hero dies or whatever. Yeah. But we know kind of the story, but musically it's very beautiful because it's what Christopher was saying, like every character is kind of redeeming, because in some section, like, the family gets food, but when the family, when the dad comes with the food, actually they lose the children. So it's like, okay, but we were sad because we didn't have food. Now I have food, but I lost the children, so they actually run into the forest to look for them. Yep. And that's a parallel story that we don't see. While every act 2 and 3 are happening, somewhere in the imagination, the parents are running in the woods looking for the kids.
Yes.
And at the end, after all the struggle with the witch, and sorry, she doesn't win, let's say like that. Then they go out and we have these ginger kids. What happened is actually it's not that she just eat the kids. She transforms them into gingerbread cookies. And then probably, like, I don't know, eat them with tea later. I don't know, whatever. So what happens
Stocking
is when Hansel...
The chorus. Truly horrified.
Trust me, it's kids friendly. And
yes, it is. It is.
Christopher is doing a very good job. So please don't freak out. So Hansel and Gretel come out of this kind of gloomy dream, and they are probably the sun is rising, everything is happy. And then they start seeing all these kids that, because they cannot move, but they start singing. And that's the beautiful part, because that's where we are going to use the choir from the Kuala Lumpur City Opera. And they start singing, and they have to be static because they are ginger cookies. But just with a touch, they can become kids again. And then they start moving and jumping, and everything is happy. And then,
if I'm not mistaken, Juan, the main theme for the finale actually is sung very briefly by Gretel in... Right, in the first few moments of the show, I think in the opera, in the first 10 minutes.
Mm. Yeah, this piece is musically composed in a very smart way, because in the overture, what we call in the opera the overture, Germans, they like to call it prelude, but it's kind of the same. Every single motif is in that prelude, and it's just orchestral, no singers. So that's very, very smart. It's very common. Like many opera composers use it, Mozart maybe not much, but kind of Humperdinck give us every motif except two, and one of them is the witch. Mm. The witch motif doesn't appear at the beginning. That's why I like it when it comes, and the first time it appears, she's not there. It's kind of like a hint, like, oh, okay, trouble is coming.
And who are playing Hansel and Gretel?
Hansel is being played by
Yiling.
Yep.
And Gretel is Ho Chi Minh. Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about Chi Minh is Chi Minh has her daughter right now. She's 2 years old. and one of the first things I mentioned to her was, Chi Minh, watch your daughter. She will teach you a few things. Mm. Okay, you got to multiply what she does by about four. but she, you know, the instincts and what she wants to do and the things that get her excited are all there. So I look forward to seeing her in every rehearsal. And I always ask, what have you learned from Mina this time?
And will the gingerbread house, which is, you know, that element that everyone knows from the story, mm-hmm. be fully realized in all its glory on stage?
Well, yes and no. Yes, as in there will be a representation of the gingerbread house that we're all looking forward to. But the no would be economic downturn, tightening of production budgets.
Compact size.
Compact. Fun size. We have a fun size gingerbread
very
house
representative
for everybody.
What is this version of Hansel and Gretel trying to say?
The idea of transitions, the idea of journey. I'm so happy to hear this word appearing so many times, because it's really about that. If you look at the set, if you look at the way everything is driven, the one thing that really caught my attention was the kids are journeying, the parents are journeying, the witch just happens to be one of the pit stops, the major pit stops, you know, and along the way...
She's the character-building journey.
Yes.
Yeah. Character-building
for the
children. The
way you start off this show is very, very contrastingly different from the way you finish the show. And ultimately, the original team that put this together are really looking at themes of the redemption that comes from the divine redemption that all these characters receive, and principally forgiveness, because that is one of the main things that happens right before with that beautiful music and the gingerbread children that are alive and we're all happy. But there is still this one moment where the father, and it always gets to me, because the father welcomes the mother back into the fold and says, hey, look, you know, we can solve this. So it ends on a very clear note of redemption, reconciliation.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today. And
thank
I look forward to watching the performance. It sounds like it's going to be lovely.
Much. Thank you so much.
And for those who have not got the tickets, you want to check out ticketpro.com.ny or call up KL Pack Box Office for your tickets, because they are group discounts and they're family discount. So the number to call is 4047-9000.
Thank you, Janet. Very nicely said for someone who's going to be playing the witch.
Thank you. Just you watch.
I've been speaking to the folks behind an upcoming staging of Hansel and Gretel, a fairy tale opera by the Kuala Lumpur City Opera. Christopher Ling, who is the stage director, Juan Montoya, the conductor, and Janet Lee, who is performing as the gingerbread witch. Hansel and Gretel will be staged from the 5th to the 8th of July at the Kuala Lumpur Performing Arts Centre. And tickets are priced from RM88 to RM168, with various discounts available. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcast on our BFM app, which is available on the App Store or Google Play. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.